Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today on Quickslants the Podcast, we dig through the Kansas City Chiefs loss and look ahead to the New Orleans Saints. Is it a disaster? Is all lost? Will the Patriots go 18-1 or 9-7? All that and more on
Quickslants the Podcast. With Gerard Mayo. Hey, what's up, everyone?
That was real soft. That was a real soft intro.
What do you mean? The whole thing?
Yeah.
Do you want your headphones?
Mayo's about to leave.
No, he's going to get his headphones.
Oh, I thought you creeped him out.
Why? Should I go again?
No, it's good.
I mean, just dive into it.
It's good to mix it up. Yeah.
Look, how many people are in the room?
I know.
We've never had this many people in the room.
Oh, I know.
So it's like suits. I can't go on and on.
There's so many suits in the room today.
Everything I do, Gerard generally seizes on and says what I did was wrong.
No.
So the more artillery I gave him, the worse it was going to be.
I am overly optimistic about your career.
All right. Well, let's do this then.
Sounded
just Mr. Optimism. It's 5 days since the friggin' game. So
yeah.
That being the case, that's Phil Perry, the Senator Phil Perry.
Yeah, hi.
That's Gerard Mayo, former Patriots linebacker.
Some people say Jared Mayo. That really pisses
that bug
me
you?
Off. Yeah, a little bit.
Sounds like an A-R-R-E-D situation.
I'm just going to change it to J. Not even J-A-Y.
Who says Jared?
Just J.
Jared,
people.
Huh?
It's like when people call Dante Hightower Donta.
Donta. But he has like...
Are you making fun of
he
me?
He has like apostrophes. And
do you call him Donta?
I think I used to call him Donta. And I also gave
I'm
up on
sure.
the apostrophe when I did... his name when I wrote it.
Yeah,
just
you've
easier.
Given up
it's
on
just
that
easier
for
to do
years.
That.
Because it puts the apostrophe
the
in
English
and then you're
major.
Trying to do
you're
it.
You're an English major and you're like, oh, let's get rid of the apostrophe. If only the apostrophe could hear you say that.
L'apostrophe. Exactly. Hey, so the game was several days ago. I want, you all probably did a quick rewatch or at least broke down what the hell was going on. I asked Gerard what happened on the Tyreek Hill touchdown. As after it happened, because he had what looked like a communication problem between Gilmore and McCourty. He said, don't, I'm driving home at the moment. I'll get to you later.
I felt the vibe change.
Back off.
My three takeaways, the Kansas City Chiefs were not going to let – are we interrupting something?
I'm listening. I'm trying to pull up the box sheet,
okay.
The box score.
He's lying.
I'm trying to pull up the box score.
Kansas City Chiefs were not going to let any kind of process or progress be made in the middle of the field. Hence, they dropped either Dee Ford or Justin Houston into that area to work as a lurker?
It's called a rat.
A rat.
You kind of look like a rat. But it's
I know I do.
Rat.
That is the one that look like a ferret.
You do.
A little like Steve Lapis.
My ferrets just look like they stink. But go ahead.
Do they?
Sorry.
Narrow little face.
I have
So you had that going on, which basically discouraged Brady from going to the middle of the field. I do think it would have been different had Julian Edelman been there and Danny Amendola had lasted longer. He would have been more persistent about it, but he wasn't. On rewatch, it was not as bad defensively as it seemed. You just
take away three plays. Take away three or four plays. And
right.
It's
and flip a couple results. And I mean, that's what the friggin' game is all about. Oh, if this happened, that happened. But there was a third down scramble by Alex Smith extending the
what
drive.
What did we say last week? What were the three keys?
But they did. They kept him in the pocket. He just extended the play.
Extending the play, find Tyreek Hill.
They found him. They watched him run.
No, they didn't find him.
They found Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, in the end zone.
Right.
In the pass rush. And those things are easier said than done, right? We're on this stinking podcast in this room. Totally understand it. But Tyreek Hill, I'm telling you, Bill probably lost 2 years off of his life and Matty P probably 5 years off of his life. When they saw Tyreek Hill running by Gilmore and McCourty, and it's like no one even, you know, they tried to catch up, but it was like it's too late, guys.
What happened on that? I mean, obviously it's a miscommunication between the two. My initial thing is, well, Devin McCourty's been here since 2009. 2010. I'm pretty sure that he didn't screw it up.
That's not true because the defense changes every week, right? So this is a game plan defense. It's not like a, you know, Dan Quinn or any of that Seattle stuff where they come out and run a couple of plays. The defense changes every week. So you'll always have these miscommunications.
So Devin screwed it up?
No, I'm not saying Devin screwed it up. From my perspective, it looked like Gilmore had that guy, had to carry that guy. If it's, you know, if you could slice the defense down the middle of the field and it's balanced on both sides, it looks like he's supposed to have that guy. But sometimes it gets gray. People like to think it's like black and white, especially like in zone. But zone, in essence, can turn to man depending on what you get, right?
Once someone comes into your zone, you play man.
Yeah, to a certain point, or sometimes you just have them. They say you bought them, right? You bought this guy. That means you have him anywhere he goes. He's in my zone now. Now you have him, depending on releases and things like that. So
that was my point on not as bad defensively. I like that stuff. And then offensively, Phil, I think it's going to stay that way for a little while. It's going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as you might think. I think it was worse actually defensively.
It was worse offensively.
Not worse than it looked, but...
I agree with you. It was much worse defensively than offensively.
More to critique there on that side of the ball. But offensively, obviously not having Julian Edelman out there is huge. And I think Tom Brady did some really good things. I thought, actually, you know, we were kind of, after the game, talking about how it became sort of a chuck and duck game. And it was at the very, very end, like the last couple of series, when Kansas City was able to really just pin their ears back and Justin Houston's attacking Marcus Cannon and getting by him pretty easily. But I thought Brady actually threw the ball really well for the majority of this game. And there were a couple of passes that were down the field that were overthrown to Chris Hogan in particular that
I can think of.
One was underthrown to Brandon Cooks.
He overthrew Dwayne Allen.
That was a bad throw. There were a couple of throws down the field that were absolutely pinpoint that were not completed because the guys that were targeted on the play didn't exactly separate. Rex Burkhead had one. Chris Hogan had a couple. The Allen throw was really egregious. Other than that, I didn't think Brady was awful. He did lock on to Danny Amendola a little more than I would have liked. I think it's just because he trusts the guy so much. There were openings elsewhere on the field in some of those plays that I saw. There was one in particular where Amendola got absolutely lit up. That's what I was talking about. He dropped the pass.
Houston dropped, and he's just waiting. That was sort of a rat.
That was sort of Justin Houston in the flat. There is that still considered a rat if it's an outside linebacker just kind of hanging out at the second
just hanging
level?
Out, just buzzing
he just feet. Totally let James White go. White was open, could have caught it and maybe run for first down. It was a 3rd and 5 play, I believe. But he threw to Amendola anyway, and Justin Houston sitting right there waiting for him.
That's exactly what they did.
I was disappointed
the Falcons in the Super Bowl run game.
Like, I know you have Tom Brady, you want to throw the ball 50 times, but against a team like Kansas City, it's like, let's establish, you know, what we're going to do in
the
trenches.
There was stuff there.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the numbers now, right?
Yep.
Gillislee, 15 carries, 45 yards, 16-yard long. Take that away, it's terrible. James White, 10 carries, 38 yards, 3.8 yards a carry. Has a 10-yarder. Mm-hmm. So really, if you essentially 9 for 28, it's like 3.5 yards a carry. I mean, that's bad.
And stuff that stands out is the short yardage stuff, right?
The fourth and ones.
There's a 3rd and 1 that they can't get, and they end up kicking a field goal. Those guys were just, you know, and it's tough, too, when it's your best lineman. There were some of those 4th and 1s. They were sliding Nate Solder as a tight end over to the right side. So you have Shaq Mason, Marcus Cannon, and Nate Solder all on the same side. Those are probably the 3 best offensive linemen. And you can't get even a half a yard of space for somebody like Mike Gillislee. That's tough.
I'm looking at the second one, the late one, where Eric Berry just made a terrific play and filled the hole. He sensed where Devlin was going. He filled the hole. Some of those plays, the first one, they got no push at all. On the 4th and 1 from the 10, they ended up getting no points on the drive. Second one I didn't like at all because they had 2nd and 1. It was a 1st and 5. When they settled for the field goal, it was 1st and 5. Then they had 2nd and 1, 3rd and 1. Because they couldn't pick it up on either of the short yardage runs, they were just banging their heads against the wall. Could they have formationed to get Brady into a position where he could have done the quarterback sneak? Because it was pretty obvious that they were lurking on the first 4th down play to not let him do it.
Yeah, I think that's easy to say, but and Bill will say the exact same thing. As the season progresses, right, you have to be able to line up mano-e-mano.
That's right.
Yeah, and pick up a yard. The thing about it, you can't block everybody. You just can't. You have a quarterback on this. You have a quarterback, so he's not blocking anyone, right? So essentially it's like 11 on 10. And if there's an Eric Berry or whoever it is in the hole, you expect the running back. Say everyone else is blocked.
Got to beat him.
Make one guy miss.
You got to run him over for a yard. Fall forward. You know, eventually, as the season progresses, what are you going to do? You're going to motion, hard count, Brady's going to sneak it. Motion, hard count, Brady's going to sneak it. But there's going to come a time in the season where it's like, you need this yard. They know you're running. Everyone in the stadium knows you're running. And you got to be able to pick it up. So,
what other takeaways did you have from the other night?
Just felt like it was interesting the way they used their personnel, specifically at linebacker. I'm glad we got Gerard here because they had Kyle Van Noy basically on the field the entire game, right in the middle of the field. But he was, a lot of times, their only true off-the-ball linebacker. They're using a lot of Jordan Richards as a linebacker. Even Devin McCourty was coming down and playing at the second level, and he was in coverage on Kelsey a lot, but he was right there where oftentimes Chung would be, and Chung was there as well. So they got three safeties kind of manning that second level for a good chunk of the game. And I'm wondering why. I know it's because the Chiefs had a lot of athletes on the field, and it sounded like Bill Belichick was trying to explain it to us as if to say, listen, we got to keep up with their speed, so that's who we need to have out there. But, Gerard, I want to ask you, I mean, at a certain point, like, is the linebacker position just, like, going away? Because isn't every team fast now? Isn't every team throwing the ball a lot now? Like, if you can't use David Harris for more than two snaps, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I think we hit on this a few times. In the past, you look at guys like Chung, those, you know, their stock is on the rise.
Right.
And a guy like David Harris, I mean, honestly, his stock's going, I mean, people aren't lining up in 21 personnel and just running the ball, like short yardage plays. This Brandon Spikes role, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, it's very small, right? And it's just shrinking each and every year. So it's tough. You know, guys like Hightower who are able to rush and play defensive end. So now you talk about hybrid positions. Now the defensive end has changed from a guy like Ty Warren, who was 6'7", 330 pounds, or Seymour, who was 6'7", 350, or whatever he was, right? Those guys have changed now to these bigger linebackers, guys who could drop like a Rob Ninkovich or Dante Hightower. And now the linebacker position is turning into the bigger safeties, right? Because offenses are – but all that stuff comes full circle because all it's going to take is someone to come out and pull – you know, a big fullback and then a big tailback, run the ball for 200 yards, control the clock, and everyone's going to say, whoa!
And we got to get bigger. We saw some of that in the Patriots' second drive because Kansas City came out answering the Patriots' first drive. Actually, it was the third drive because they got stopped in the second. And they basically went to power eye with James Devlin and Gillislee, and they pounded it at him. It looked like just a toss.
Yeah.
But a
stretch toss isn't pounding it, though.
No, you're right.
Because even on, the zone blocking and things like that. I'm talking about when teams line up, they bring in an extra lineman. Like how the Jets used to be. Remember the Jets used to have Richardson and all those guys?
Yep.
They would bring in an extra lineman. They would unbalance the line. You know what I mean when I say unbalance the line? So it would be just a guard and tight end on one side, and they would bring that tackle or whoever over on the other side. And you knew they were running right here. But they were like, hey, our guys are better than your guys. But when you're able to that's the key difference. You know, everyone loves to see a guy like Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers throw for 400 yards. But you talk about a team, you know, just taking your will away is when a team just averages 4.5 yards a carry. It's just like, boom, boom. And you know it's a run play, and you can't stop them. It literally takes away your heart. Like, you're just done.
Hold that thought. This time seems as good as any to mention the Expats podcast. Yeah, that's right. It's the first episode of the season, and that is starring Dan Copen and Mike Giardi.
A couple of stars right there.
You know one as Dan Copen, former Patriots center, who Bill Belichick famously would say anytime he asked, what are some of Dan's strengths? His strength is his strength. Dan being a strong guy, kind of country strong. He gives some excellent insight on how the new CBA is impacting the first months of seasons, which I am a big believer in as well, and why offenses look out of sync and maybe some of the injury effect. And, of course, Giardi bringing his quintessential and inimitable style and debonair flavor to the entire production. That's the Expats podcast that you're going to enjoy. Did you feel as if the Patriots because I think their running game is going to sort itself out a little bit because they'll be able to be more complimentary. Once they establish that middle of the field and start to make the other teams have to respect somebody in there, then they'll have to change personnel a little bit, and then they can run at them. But I looked at this game, and in hindsight, when you looked at Jordan Richards on the field and Cassius Marsh, and said to myself, look, this is the situation where they miss Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
And they miss maybe Grugier Hill. And I'm seasoned on him, Phil. I've mentioned him a couple times. Do you think I'm overstating that, the kid from last
year? No, because he's exactly the kind of position we're talking about. He is that new age linebacker. He's 215, 220 pounds, and he runs really well. I think when they brought him in here, that's what they kind of envisioned. They end up cutting him, and he gets picked up by the Eagles, and he's still there. He's still on the roster in Philly because there's value at that position. I wonder if they feel like that was a mistake in hindsight.
Those guys won a Super Bowl without Jamie, though. So I feel like that's the easy way out, right?
Absolutely.
And if I'll just put this out there. How many people listen to this podcast? 5, 10?
Hundreds of
thousands. Listen, if one more person comes up to me in the streets and is like, hey, they could have used you on Sunday. Listen, I am done. I am legit done. I'm 225 pounds.
Ooh, you're safety size.
I'm like a new age. I am a new age linebacker. Bring me back. No.
See, you'd be chasing Tyreek Hill.
Guys like Jamie and those guys, they're gone, right? So now you look at the guys that we have right now. And for me,
I'm just sideswiping on the decision, saying, see, this is a game where at the linebacker level, you had Van Noy, you didn't have McClellan, Hightower was playing up, and you ended up with Van Noy and Richards at the second level, which is a come down from Collins and Hightower, which is a come down from Mayo and Hightower.
Yeah. I understand. It's the first game.
I know. I'm not saying it's a disaster. I'm not saying they got to go get Jamie Collins.
I'm more concerned.
How do they fix it?
I'm more concerned about the communication than the personnel. Because even a guy like Jordan Richards, Van Noy, you know these guys are athletic. You know they can make all the plays at the second level. They just can, right?
Mm-hmm.
Playing linebacker or you know how I play, it's just not that hard. I say that and I'm being honest with you guys. You go, you make communications, you go tackle a couple of guys, boom, you go cover a couple of guys, whatever. Guys like Hightower who are, you know, setting up pass rush moves. Now, you know, because the thing about defensive end, you know, everyone's like, oh, this guy had 3 sacks, but he played 70 plays. It took him 55 plays to set up the 3 sacks, right? No, seriously.
Yeah, I get
the
you.
Little battles inside of the, yep. you know, the little battles inside of the war. But a guy like Jordan Richards definitely has the skill set to play against a 4 wide receiver set in this little back, right? He can cover all, I shouldn't say cover like man to man all these guys. Mm-hmm. He can't. But if you're going to send a running back out here, he's going to cover him. Cover Kelsey with help. They're never going to leave him on his, you know, by himself. My thing is the communication was brutal.
Which you predicted.
And the thing about having Hightower on the line of scrimmage, which is great, but you can't talk to the entire defense playing defensive end. You're so far removed from the other side of the ball. And that's why having a middle linebacker in there who can turn around and say, Devin, no, we're doing this. Can say, Branch, we're doing this, and you can speak. You know, you're just in the middle of everything. That's the missing piece. You're not going to have a Jordan Richards making calls. It's just not going to happen.
So early on in the game, there were a couple of plays where you could see just about everybody in the front 7 trying to communicate right up until the ball is snapped.
Yeah,
and guys not really knowing where they're supposed to be. And Van Noy is the guy in the middle, and he's the one that we all pay attention to because he got the green dot. But you said this multiple times. Listen, communication is a two-way street. And so you can see him talking to Hightower. Hightower screaming across the line to Chung.
Yep.
And all of those guys trying to work it out together. And it's just too late in the play to be able to do it. Devin's in his safety spot trying to figure out what are we trying to communicate something to him.
Is that one of the complications of playing at home?
That's no, because let's be all right. It was a loud game.
Because it's loud.
But let's be honest. Like, Foxborough, I mean, you know, Gillette is not the loudest stadium.
It's not like LSU.
It's not like, yeah, exactly. It's not like going, you know. No, seriously. No knock to our fans. It's just not that loud. So my thing is, you know, how does Maddie – this is going to be interesting, especially going against the Saints, right, mm-hmm. where they're going to formation you to death. They're going to bring in all these different – you have to know what back is in the game at what time, right? They have 3 backs with 3 different skill sets. So now it's going to be like, hey, how does Matty P and how do they trim the fat off of the game plan and not become, you know, because they're just not, like I said, to go back to the Seattle thing, it's not like they're just excellent at this one coverage. No. But how do you trim the fat, make the calls easy, so a guy like Jordan Richards can say things with confidence? It's all about confidence, because Jordan Richards, he went to Stanford. Didn't he go to Stanford?
Yes, he did.
I'm like, he's probably one of the smartest kids on the team. But it goes to confidence. It goes back to confidence, where it's like, hey, I remember being in the locker, in the huddle 2008 as, Bill benched me. Bill benched me in 2008, my rookie year. I was rookie of the year. Thanks, Bill. He benched me. We were playing San Francisco. And I remember he put so much pressure on me, which I appreciate today, but I hated it then. And I was calling the games, right? And when I say the games, like spike right, rip left, truck left, it's like the pass rushing mm-hmm. schemes, right? And every time I would say one, he'd be like, give me another one. And he was just
so
behind
where were
me.
You, film room?
No. We were out on the field doing okay. five versus four. And so like half line. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing the calls, and you could legit smell the smoke coming out of my ears, because my brain was like, but doing that though, you gain confidence, right? I'm talking to Vince Wilfork. I'm talking to Teddy Bruschi and Ty Warren, Seymour. I'm talking to these guys. Now it's like Jordan Richards, he does all the special teams, solid player. But now you want him to tell an Allen Branch to get his ass down in the B gap. It's just not going to happen.
Okay, but does Allen say, I don't think that's the right call, and does his own thing?
Yeah, but you can't have that.
But
on
does
the
he
field.
Do? Would that be what happens?
He would. He probably would okay. with a guy like Jordan or even Van Noy. He probably would. Because the thing about it, you can't do that. It's like this. It's
and
like
Bill says, if one person's doing the wrong thing, you want it. If it's the wrong call, that's fine, as long as everybody's doing it wrong together.
Exactly. So it's like this. Someone, and it's hard for Hightower to do it on the outside. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the middle this week. Someone has to say, everyone, shut up. Maybe not in those terms. Everyone just shut. This is what we're doing. Boom. You get to the sideline, you figure it out. Right? You figure it out.
So. That's why not having David Harris on the field almost at all mm-hmm. is a hit too, because we all thought that, he would be the kind of guy you could plop in the middle there. He has that respect. He has that cachet with whoever he's been playing with because of his status in the league the last 10 years. And it may not be what Hightower's is, but at least he can handle those communication things, and the guys can trust him because they trust what he's seeing.
Him come in this week. He'll just mirror Peterson. When Peterson
well, that's
in,
the thing. Exactly. David Harris yep, I was going to say.
When Peterson goes out, David Harris will go out.
Yeah.
So is this, to boil it down then, the communication is more important than what people perceived as a lack of talent from Kyle Van Noy or
for
Jordan
sure.
Richards? Because – I don't honestly, after watching him last year, I do not look at Kyle Van Noy, and people are like, oh, he just signed a 2-year extension. Huh, bad timing. I'm like, they had a bad game, but I'm not seeing Kyle Van Noy outright sucking on.
I agree.
You watched the game again. Did he outright suck?
No. I think the communication thing is definitely an issue, though, especially in the past. There did look like there were a couple of those big plays specifically, and I would love to watch the Hunt play with you, Gerard, because – I don't know if it was Tampa 2. I don't know what the coverage was. Mm. But it looked like he was getting his butt back to the deep middle part of the field. And we're getting super heavy X's and O's. But Kelce and Hill, their two best players, are on one side of the field. He's dropping, and he turns his hips to the opposite side. And so as Kelce runs a post over the middle, Devin starts to – that gets Devin's attention. And
well,
Devin kind of goes
Hill
with him.
Play.
The Hill long touchdown. So I don't know if it would have changed anything if all Van Noy did was turn his hips to see where Kelce was going, and then maybe McCourty sees that, mm-hmm. and maybe McCourty is able to just kind of split the difference between the two again.
I don't remember the formation. The total.
Maybe we can watch again. But there was the other play where I think Van Noy was involved. Like I said, it's hard for me to tell because we don't know the specific calls, but where Marsh ends up covering Hunt on the long Kareem Hunt touchdown, it looked like Van Noy's eyes maybe got kind of caught in the backfield, and he kind of crashed down on somebody who's running into the flat who was already covered instead of maybe giving Marsh a little bit of help. So I think there's just things to iron out. They clearly like him. I think they see him as a developing player because all through college he was an up-the-field defensive end basically. And now he's a big body. He's a good athlete. They really would like him to work in the middle, obviously. And they obviously see some potential there. It's just, the mistakes to clean up.
If your overall Madden rating is an 80, no, seriously.
Is that where he is?
No. If your overall Madden, I don't play Madden, but this is what I'm just using this for the listeners.
Okay.
If your overall Madden rating is an 80, right? We'll just use a nice fat round number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And the communication, like everyone's trying to communicate, like, oh, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And no one really sits there and says, boom, you're 72 instantly. Because no matter if, how athletic you are, right, if you don't know which way you're going, you know, you heard old coaches say, give me the guy who runs a 4.8 and he's going the right way, then the guy running a 4.3 going the wrong way, right, if you're taking all these false steps mm-hmm. and things like that. So they'll definitely iron it out, and I know people are probably like, this guy's such a homer. No, I'm not. I'm being a realist.
Well, we've watched it for friggin' really for 17 years now. I've watched it for 17 years. Whatever is screwed up,
yeah,
they fix. How do they go about fixing an issue like this? You talked about trimming the fat. Tough team to trim the fat against with communication, because these are probably, honestly, the two most complex offenses in the league in terms of personnel and formation, because they have two offensive-minded coaches back-to-back, Reed and Peyton.
But the Vikings kind of made that offense look pretty.
Yeah, but they're a much better defense. Aren't they? Don't they have much more carryover in their defense than New England has right now? The Vikings are a pretty talented defense,
right? Yeah, up front.
Yeah,
they're really good.
They're a good player. Yeah, I mean, a good team.
But I'm just saying, if communication's a bitch last week, New Orleans is probably not, or maybe they are the best team to face the next week, because they're going to stress you too with all their personnel.
I think so. And I know the guys are really looking at this like, hey, this is a bounce back game, big challenge. It's better to go against these guys in Cleveland this week and get like a little layup. And then you guys would still, yeah, say you guys, the media, I mm-hmm. guess it's me now, right? We would still be talking about the Kansas City blowout. So this is a huge test, huge stress on the team in general. I want to see special teams come through too. I mean, we kind of forget about special teams, but I'm like, you got to get Slater back out there.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get Slater back, because then we talked about this emotional thing, right? And Slater's one of those guys who's an emotional leader. But after, like, I want to say like the middle of the third quarter, you kind of felt like the game's it's going the wrong way.
They
never had someone like boom, like to kind of change the tide back, right?
Because they're without Edelman, without you know, Hightower leads the game in the third quarter. Amendola, who I think in some ways may be able to be kind of an emotional leader, you know, you lose all those guys, and then Slater's gone too. It's like who's steering the ship right now?
And then there weren't plays to ignite offensively. You could probably see it on Tom's face if you're a defensive player. And he throws outside, and it's bouncing around the field, and he's coming back like this. Mm-hmm. Then defensively, you're feeling it as well.
Substitution weirdness on special teams, too, with all the injuries and all the new guys.
Yeah.
You had some late guys subbing in.
Yeah.
You had two running into
the
punter shit.
The penalties.
That shit
Brandon
happens,
King
I would
had a
imagine.
Bad penalty.
Those are things that are going to happen in the first game.
Mm-hmm.
First game.
Tom talked about the attitude and the energy and the commitment and the intensity. After the game, I don't know if you heard those comments
that
Brady made.
Let me hear your best Tom impression. What did he say?
Yeah, no, we're trying our best out there. You know, we put a lot into it, and I think that we just need to be more committed. You know, I didn't see a lot of commitment out there, and the guys in that room, they're the ones who could really do it. Yeah. It's got to be better. So that's what he said.
Yeah.
I was surprised at that. Because there wasn't any kind of smoking gun series, although maybe the 78-yard, 79-yard, and 58-yard runs probably should have served as smoking guns.
The fourth quarter in general, it was just kind of ugly, and it was pretty clear.
It was.
Brady's WEI interview and then Bill Belichick's conference call with us, they specifically pointed out the fourth quarter. We learned a lot about our team the fourth quarter. Fourth quarter especially, we got to be.
So if you think Bill's like, hey, we're going to the hills. They're at the hill right now as we speak.
Have they shown – have you ever been part of a team
– at the hill, yeah.
You ever been part of a team that looked shitty at the beginning and almost to the point where you had a question about its level of competitiveness and character, and that team was able to evolve into a more competitive and intense team?
I think you always start the season off kind of like – were just not that good, even after a win. If they would have just eked out
they could have won that game very easily.
Yeah, exactly. But even if they just eked out a 3-point win, it's like, guys, you know, great win, or we have a lot of work to do. My thing is this, and this is what makes Bill one of the best, right? And I, you know, my grandfather kind of taught me this as well. But you never get too high after wins, right? And never get too low after losses. And, you know, it's like, you know, the media, all that stuff, and those guys will learn, especially young guys. Like, don't pay attention to it. But, you know, my thing is, you should run away from the past like it's the plague. And I think Bill hit it when he was like, this isn't 01, this isn't 02, this isn't 2011, this isn't 2012. Because he knows, you know, this is a different group of guys. It's a different group of guys. And, you know, they'll figure it out. They'll find a way. I'm sure they are, you know, there will be no stone left unturned this week. And that's not guaranteeing a win for all you degenerate gamblers out there. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm saying these guys are going to come out. They're going to come out with a lot of energy. But another thing Bill's going to hit on, he's going to say, guys, I'm going to be honest with you. We don't want to be seen as front runners. You know, front runners, they're like, they're out front, everything's good, everything, you know, we're good. And as soon as you get smacked in the face, you know, because they got smacked in the face, those fourth downs,
mm-hmm.
those are huge plays, not only just, you know, field position, but emotionally.
Momentum.
Yeah. But emotionally, you're like, oh, shoot, I'm just not that strong. Not on that play, right? What did I do wrong? So now you're trying to figure out, what did I do wrong?
Now you're having a crisis.
I'm having a midlife crisis right here on the field. I thought me benching 450 was going to be able to move this 300-pound guy. But leverage, what does this leverage thing? They talked about in physics. What is this leverage thing?
It's hard.
You're killing me. Yeah. It is hard.
What's interesting, too, is they got the 3 extra days to kind of just sit and stew on it, too. Because Saints didn't play till Monday. Their game was Thursday. It was like Harmon said earlier this week, man, it sucked because it just gave us so much time to go over every little detail from that game.
I wonder what the conclusion would be, because after I watched, you know, digested it Friday, listened to all the bullshit talking about it, and then watched it again, I'm like, it really wasn't that bad. I wonder if the players themselves came to the same conclusion. It really wasn't that bad.
For three quarters, it really wasn't.
Fourth quarter
was ugly.
I mean, it's a little pale of mistakes that if they weren't there on both sides of the ball, and if the mistakes hadn't been made or the non-conversions hadn't been made offensively, then the other side would have looked totally different.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
And the field. They ripped up the field.
Yeah, why? Did you have a problem with that field?
That was a new – I never played on that field. That was new.
I know. It was new last year, and it was new a couple times.
Yeah. Why do guys hate the softness of it?
Honestly,
that's always – I don't know. It feels like it's always a thing.
You know, when Indy put that field in, I liked it. It was nice and soft. Yeah,
it's like a moonwalk, hitting it,
like a bouncy
ground,
like
just
like running
time.
On pillows. Like, I'm running on pillows. Doesn't hurt to tackle people. Like, some of my best games were on soft fields. Oh, 24 tackles.
Did you ever get a pelletized thing in your eye?
A what?
One of those little rubber pellets?
A tire?
Yeah, a piece of tire in your eye.
Yeah. I wore a visor, but it's still sometimes. You know what you do before the game? You just grab a bunch of shredded up tires and just rub it in your eyes. Ah,
that gets them
you
ready.
You just numb yourself. Just sit ready. Ah,
scratch your corneas just to get them good.
Scratch my corneas.
I thought you were going to say eat a little bit.
Eat
I was
a little
you
bit.
Do some less miles.
I need more
stuff.
Arsenic in my diet.
That's why we have them. That's why we.
Because he's weird.
I am weird.
Yeah.
Who wants to be normal? Who wants to be regular? Hey, you know, if you're regular, turn off this podcast because it's not for you. This is for the geeks of the world. For the people who want
right.
to die
just a little off
deeper.
Beat.
Right.
A little offbeat. You march to your own drum.
Yeah.
All right, Gerard. Thanks a lot for today.
See you next time.
Hey, now that Gerard's gone?
Yeah.
The Best of BST podcast? Starring Michael Hawley, Casey Smith, and Tom Giles, and me, Tom Curran, can come to you every single morning, 20-minute episode, get you caught up on everything we spoke about the night before. Sometimes you don't stay up for the whole thing.
No, not everybody can stay up that late. It's a late show.
It is.
It's a great show.
We also compress it, and compact it, and dilute it, and diffuse it, and then we
package it and send it out
to you people.
Audio waves in the internet.
And it's funny.
On the internet.
When we do the promo on the show, we're like, hey, it's ready for you in the morning, but I'm not going to penny somebody in to just being able to do it in the morning. You can listen to it in the afternoon.
Right. You could do it. You could listen to it while you're working out. You know, while maybe you're on the train ride home, and then you can listen to that podcast and then watch the show later that night, and now you're all caught up on everything that's happening.
You could even binge it on the weekends.
Sure.
Imagine if somebody did that. They binge listened to the
Hey,
podcast.
Tom, can you play for our softball team this weekend? No, I'm actually, I'm just going to hang out. I think I got like 7 or 8 BST, Best of BST podcasts.
Why don't you just listen to it in the outfield? Oh, good call, dude. All right, that's the BST podcast. You know where to find it. Back to live action. Phil? That was some good stuff with Gerard. Now, we look forward to the Saints this week.
Mm-hmm.
Are you eyes deep on this thing yet?
Not quite yet. I wouldn't say eyes deep, but we did get to, this is Tuesday we're recording this, did get to talk to both coordinators today, Bill Belichick, heavy, heavy Saints focus. Obviously, the Saints offense is what Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick were really hitting on most frequently. And Drew Brees. I think that's where we're going to start. I mean, Tom, how freaking good is this guy? You've been covering this league for a long time. Is this
He's a stat producer.
Okay, but is he... That's not a terrible thing when you're a quarterback. Production is good. Stats are sometimes indicative of solid quarterback play.
I'm not a big Drew Brees guy.
Why not?
Because he's a stat producer. He's a numbers whore. He's
Tom
not.
Tom Brady puts up great numbers every year.
But I think given his druthers, it's very clear what Tom Brady would prefer to do. I think that Drew Brees takes some solace in being able to put up numbers.
That's interesting.
Seven and nine.
Now you're attacking his character too.
No, I don't think this attacking one's character.
No.
I mean, it might speak to his character if he's happy with that, or maybe it speaks to Tom Brady's character. That he always has to win, always has to win, he always has to win. Maybe Drew Brees has an ability to look on the bright side of things. Well, we just went 7-9 again, but I threw for 5,137 yards.
Maybe that's
him being a little bit more grounded in the world of reality where other people win too sometimes.
Which, you know, hey, good for him, I guess. He's won a Super Bowl. He has also been a part of teams that have had just absolutely atrocious defenses over the years, and there's only so much the guy can do. 5,000-yard
seasons. Freaking argument? Did you see how this
5,000-yard season?
He's, like, extolling the virtues of Drew Brees, and I just said I'm not a big Drew Brees guy. He's a stats guy. He's a numbers guy. He's a great quarterback. He's a great passer.
Yes.
But he's Marino.
Okay.
He's a latter-day Marino, an unbelievable passer, deserves worthy of a Hall of Fame nod.
Where would you rank him off the top of your noggin?
12. And even that might be aggressive.
Because his numbers are going to, his numbers in terms of yards and touchdowns, whatever,
12,
they're going to dwarf some guys. Like I heard on the radio today, I honestly don't remember who it was. Somebody put him in the top five.
Oh, see?
That sounds strong to me.
It's Brady, Montana, Elway, Manning, Marino, Favre. Now I'm going to start just spraying them. Fouts, Staubach.
Fouts?
Fouts was sick. Fouts, Unitas?
Fouts.
Yeah, Unitas belongs in there. Probably ahead of Fouts. I'm not going to auto-Graham anybody because that bullshit about the All-American Football Conference.
Yeah, come on.
Come on,
let's get into that.
He won
That's a good podcast.
Titles in the All-American Football Conference. Okay, there were four teams in the All-American Football Conference.
Bart Starr never lost in the playoffs.
Bart Starr is not going to be on my list. John Hadle.
Oh, boy. Okay. No, but anyway, he's right in that top 10 range.
Steve Young is a better quarterback than... Nah, you know what? Same ilk. Steve Young
right
and Drew
there
Brees.
Steve
same,
Young.
Same guy. Troy Aikman's better than Drew Brees.
The other thing about Brees, which if we're just being consistent here, the nose strikes again. Wow. I really hope everybody at home was able to hear that. The longevity, Tom. Why do we always talk about how Tom Brady's getting it done at a very late age, in our very late stage in his career, when Drew Brees is sitting here at 38? Still one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
And a little guy, too.
A little guy who's pretty mobile.
Who
taking
has to
some
get
big
up on
hits
tiptoes.
Over the course of the years.
The Drew Brees hit when his head, like, kind of contorted and, like,
oh,
came
wow.
up
and and he looked like Stretch Armstrong with the neck. That was great. He also had...
How do you like that, Tomasi?
Tomasi hates
that. Did you see that Tomasi
call? Yeah, he hates that photo and that still image, that gif of Drew Brees.
Hey, what are those kids are skateboarding over there. Come on, everybody off the playground. We can't be around this. What are those people swimming in the ocean? They've ruined my beach day. They might be eaten by a shark.
I refuse to watch it.
I refuse to frolic on the beach.
We love Tomasi. 1 point to your argument before we move off of Drew Brees and we get on to Adrian Peterson. The interception numbers are, like, insane. When you stack them up.
Throws a lot of picks,
When you stack them up with Brady, he had a 19-pick year. He had a 22-pick year. He threw 15 in 2016. He threw 17 2 years before that. So, listen, throws a lot of touchdowns, throws for a lot of yards, pass-happy offense. Sean Payton, we know the whole deal. but throws it to the other team quite a bit.
Yep.
Maybe that's because he's put in some spots. I know I'm making excuses for him. Maybe he's put in some bad spots because he does. He's never. I mean, when has he had a good defense? When they won the Super Bowl?
When he fires up, he is nasty. When he gets hot, yeah. When Breeze gets hot, he is ridiculous. You know what's also ridiculous? The number of 5-star reviews we got this week. First one comes in here from Cravon Colbert.
Cravon?
Even my girlfriend.
Hold on. How did you just move right past that?
The Cowboys fan has... Why is this so faded?
Oh, boy. Do you need me to read it?
You can't read it either. Your eyes are worse than mine.
Even my girlfriend, the closeted, the cloistered Cowboys fan. So you said the closeted Cowboys fan loves this pod. Quick Slants, the podcast is how I keep my fan game sharp.
How do you? Can you
fan
do that?
Game strong from Cravon. That's C-R-E apostrophe V-O-N. Colbert feels
Tom
like it might not be
Senator
his real first
Phil
name.
Perry. Deal this tonight.
Deal the insight. Institutional memory and enough
and
X's
thoughts.
And O's. To make me a savvier viewer by game day. The more freewheeling the episode,
the
better.
The better, including Tom's bouts of Tourette's and Phil's off-season draft previews are priceless as well. Great stuff. I don't miss an episode.
Thanks, Cravon.
That looked like mix.
That's a nice 5-star review. That took forever to read, so I'm going to take
you
care of the rest
of these.
You know what we
should do? You know what? If we made more money for the entire company here with the podcast... We would probably buy a ribbon printer.
We'd have more ink.
Printer for the ribbon.
I think it's just the font color. Because the stars are coming in real strong.
Heavy. It's low on the gray
screen. Yeah, you're right. Okay, with love from Nigeria. This is from R-D-A-W-O-D-U. I'm not going to even try to pronounce that. But with love from Nigeria. We got fans everywhere. All the best, guys. I hope you get another sponsor, even though I prefer the flow of conversation without taking breaks to do commercials. Well, listen. You know, we got to pay the bills, too. Very knowledgeable, and at least one moment has me laughing uncontrollably.
Ba-do-do-do.
I'm not sure we've had that moment yet, but it's coming. Awesome podcast, 5 stars from Fine
Parker.
How come
I don't get to read anymore?
One of my favorite podcasts. Love the in-depth analysis you guys get into. Especially enjoy it when Mayo is on. Always great to hear behind-the-scenes stories about his time with the Pats. I actually get that in person all the time. Story time with Uncle Gerard Mayo. People can't get enough.
It's funny.
They
can't get
enough.
We do have to have mail cam at some point. Very entertaining podcast, says FGFDGG. This is a guy just pounding on the keys.
I don't know. These look like some well-structured sentences coming up
these
here.
Guys,
can you read these?
Put an entertaining and very informative upon on sports podcasts. Good segments, occasional located arguments, and a guest phone call once in a while keeps me coming back. Odd counterpoint is that they are C's consistent in how far they sit from the mic. We'll switch from talking real loud to real quiet.
That's a TC thing. I'm putting that all on
I think
you.
I had some bad reads in this word.
Yeah,
words.
Yeah. Oh, you think so? best podcast, best Patriots podcast. This is from Randall. Thanks, Randall. 5 stars. Good man, smart, informative, and funny. They have better info and analysis than that other Big Pats podcast without the tedious filler and argument.
Which one is that?
I don't know.
I don't even listen.
I feel like we should be listening. If there's another big
I
one out there.
I listen to Bill Burr, and that's about it.
We should be listening to, well, you listen to the X-Pats podcast. Is that what they could be talking about? X-Pats?
I thought Bill Burr was on the X-Pats podcast. Is
he
that COVID?
Should be.
They
he
look similar.
Be.
They're both alabaster and redheaded.
They may be related. Anyway, thank you guys for all the comments. Those are all tremendous. Keep sending them in. We need more comments. We need more reviews. We need more people to smash that subscribe button like we tell you every week. It helps get the podcast out there. We know you're listening. We know you're enjoying it because you're telling us. So keep doing that.
Preferably a 5-star review. Keep doing that. I mean, you can if you want to slam kids around and you know we're out here trying and
grinding.
Shit.
Yeah.
And I haven't said the entire show, and it's for you people. It's too early in the week to get after the Saints right now. To be candid, Phil,
you want to talk at all
we're
about Adrian
do that
Peterson?
On the podcast. We're going to try and double podcast people.
We are. Good
we're
point.
Gonna have picks and fantasy shit, and
okay,
we'll get back into it.
Do you want to do any? Reader, listener questions, because we
did
do
send
do
them
that.
In?
Yeah.
Oh,
we do have
shit,
a couple.
Yeah, I'm
we
sorry.
Do have a couple. Okay, we got a question in here from Brendan Gill. Besides Flowers.
You know who Brendan Gill is?
No.
Former RAC referee.
How was he?
He was pretty good. He was pretty good.
Called it fair?
At this juncture of my life, I'm much better to the referees than I used to be. I wasn't an
What's
asshole
your worst,
to the refs.
What was your worst referee interaction?
probably just to stop fucking guessing. Just stop fucking guessing. Oh, and also with the dude, I can't remember
what
his name
was.
These
guys are getting paid, what, $20 a game?
Exactly. So don't guess. Either if somebody falls, if somebody gets whacked and falls down, call it. Don't just guess. They just guess. But I stopped doing that stuff later on. So you can ask Brendan Gill. Brendan, you can send a thing next week, perhaps as a review of
what Tom was like on the court. Now that we have our requisite.
My demeanor. No, I don't. No one gives a shit about how bad I am at basketball at this point. Just my demeanor improved.
So he
said when I would yell at teammates for being bitches.
So he says, besides Flowers, is Cassius Marsh going to step it up this week against the Saints as that other reliable pass rusher? Oof, Brendan.
I really liked some of the points that Gerard made. We have a tendency to look at a guy and he's on the scene of the crime and we go, ah, sucks forever. When generally speaking, if they're NFL talent, and I'm not going to say Cassius Marsh is not, nor am I going to say Jordan Richards is not. Something holds these guys back. They're not the second coming of Brian Urlacher or, you know, Ronnie Lott.
Or even Chris Long.
Or even Chris Long. But they will play better the next week than after their maiden voyage.
Great point. Cassius Marsh should certainly be better as he moves along here after playing in a game where he practiced maybe two or three times with the team before having to get in that game.
I still give them so much credit for scheming that shit up to get him.
It was a great call.
Caught in the grinder out there.
It was a great call. And well,
it's
when
like
you
that
rewatch
Mr. Krabs
it,
thing.
When you rewatch
the Mr. Krabs meme. Well, that's what Curtis
Meyer. Everything on around him is just swirling. it was a great play call from Andy Reid because they, if you watch it again, the Chiefs motioned Tyreek Hill, who is always one of these threats to take an end around, to take one of these reverse runs. They motion him. Daron Harmon comes screaming down from his free safety spot in the deep middle of the field. All of a sudden, there's nobody in the deep middle of the field, and Cassius Marsh is finding himself chasing Kareem Hunt on a wheel route with a wide open middle of the field to run through. So, good play call by the Chiefs. Not a great spot for Cassius Marsh to be in, but he's trying hard. He is a focused, very intense young man from what we know of him thus far in his tenure in New England. Tom, next question. We're going to do two more. This is from Moses, or is it? I think it's still Moses, spelled Moises, Tovar.
Well, then why wouldn't it be
any
Moises?
Chance he's
like Moises?
I don't know.
Alou.
Yeah, it could
Moises,
be Moises. Alou.
Moises,
yeah, yeah.
Moises Alou.
Moises Tovar says any talk of making a trade for some front seven help, maybe an additional piece at receiver. Hashtag quickslants. Thank you, Moises.
I think that's too early. To
might
pick
be a little early.
You gotta let it settle. However, the injury to Gerard,
oh boy.
The injury to Dont'a Hightower.
Yep.
means
Dante.
That he's in a look. It's going to be a 2 to 4 week injury. It's an MCL.
That's
what they take.
I have two names for you.
Okay.
Rob Ninkovich. Thoughts. Return.
No insight.
No insight, but do you think he would help?
Yeah.
I don't know
if he's immediately better than Curtis Blow. But
no, but I do think when we were talking about some of the communication stuff,
yes,
like that all of a sudden maybe gets a little better if he's out there. Not that he's going to be running the whole defense, but he at least knows what's going on. Another name, Akeem Ayers. Akeem Ayers is still floating around.
I don't know how he is after two seasons passed.
Right. But another guy who at least would be familiar, can play a little off the ball, can play a little on the line of scrimmage. Just a couple of low-key names to keep in mind. They're not bringing any all-pros in here, I don't think, unless they make some kind of really massive trade, like a Butler trade or a Jimmy Garoppolo trade. I don't think anything like that is in the offing. So I wouldn't hold your breath. I wouldn't hold your breath. The front seven, I think, is fixable. I think it's not going to look that bad every week, and especially the front four was not terrible. Alan Branch had a down game. Malcolm Brown had kind of a down game, I thought. Trey Flowers was like the best defensive player on the field at points in that game. Dietrich Wise is showing promise. Adam Butler is showing promise. So Lawrence Guy, I thought, had some really strong moments when they tried to block him one-on-one. He is a strong kid for, you know, he's one of their smaller defensive, interior defensive linemen. Strong guy. Sorry, I almost read just a completely inappropriate something that was in my mentions here. People are pointing out that Gronk looks slow and clumsy against KC. For the first game of the year, he looks less than fresh. Thoughts? That's from David Rohrer.
That was on the Quickslants program as well.
Well, I'm clearly just jacking questions from the Quickslants program at this point. What was your answer to that on the program? If
Mayo handled that one, and he said that Gronk has always looked clumsy, which I agree with.
That's true. So the diet's not helping him yet in terms of that.
I think he landed on the ball.
I think he did too. He was still a little shaken up by that.
You know what? We'll close the podcast on this.
Yep.
I still didn't see a point at which I saw the ball moving without his hand on it. And I'm not being a homer. If I saw another game, it looked like he had his hand under the ball, and I didn't see it moving around. Am I crazy?
You got no fight from the Patriots, though. No challenge.
I know. Both. But did you see a replay? They called it a catch. I needed to see something where the ball was removed from his body, which would hurt. That would be a testiculectomy.
I think there was a replay that showed it. I don't remember being all that outraged by that call. But
tweeting that it doesn't look like the ball moved and he had his hand under it, and some guy just flipped out on me for being
killed you. In terms of the athleticism thing, something to watch. I do think the two catches that he made were actually like really well thrown balls,
and even the one he dropped. Pretty,
you know, like the ball he dropped. I mean, how much more athletic you want to see the guy move? I mean, he's like he's running full speed down the seam, full extension, almost makes a diving catch. That's a pretty athletic maneuver for a 6'7", 260-pound guy. So, anyway, we'll watch it week two. We'll keep a close eye on it in practice. We'll keep you updated when we get that second pod in what the injury report looks like. I think we're going to have all kinds of new additions to that thing because it looked like kind of a rough game for some of those guys. And so, we'll see. Tom, you got anything else to add before we go?
Just this. Talk to you later in the week, I hope.